This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Kislansky.
And we're your hosts for Art Moves.
And today we have some special guests.
Yes, we do. I am certainly going to introduce these folks because we've been dying to get them on Art Moves for the last couple seasons.
Yep.
And they are the founding directors of the Land Art Generator Project. And we have Robert Ferry, and we also have Elizabeth Manoyan. I'm so excited to talk to you because I've been working in the energy space for about 34 years. And one of the big dilemmas has always been, how do we make our infrastructure integrate with the environment? So talk to us a little bit about Land Art Generator. What is it? What are you doing?
Yeah, thanks for having us. The Land Art Generator is a space and an organization that invites interdisciplinary teams to reimagine what our energy landscapes can be. So what that means is we're asking people to rethink energy landscapes as places of wow and wonder and opportunities for community. So imagine a large-scale piece of artwork in the landscape that is also a power plant.
How receptive have utility or energy companies been to making this happen? Because when I think about energy, I think about the fact that it needs to be reliable, the fact that it needs to be affordable, and the fact that it needs to kind of just blend in. It's a piece of infrastructure that if it's in your community, you might say, I don't want it there. So we, you know, I'm just wondering, how do you create that? How do you make that happen? How do you change mindsets?
Would you say that it's hard to miss? I mean, like,
yeah, right.
Energy plant and towers. And
right. But then there's smaller things like unit substations. So you haven't seen all that.
No, I understand.
Yeah. But it's still, it's bricks. It's not, you know, but
yeah,
anyway.
It's like that movie, My Cousin Vinny, who said, yeah, you like U-Blend. No, but yeah.
But New York has done some interesting substations behind false brownstone facades and things like that. So that's
really.
Right.
So the history of the relationship between our energy infrastructure and art and architecture and design goes way back to the beginning of electrification, when all of our power plants were right in the hearts of our cities. We are just across the river from where in electrical a DC microgrid, the first one, was basically installed in downtown Manhattan, and it ran off of gas-fired turbines. And of course, we had coal-fired plants in the city. And if you ask somebody on the street where their electricity came from, they would just point to the building. And they were all designed beautifully to fit into the fabric of the urban environment. Many of them have been turned into museums, like the Tate Modern, for example. Because as soon as we were able to raise the voltage of transmission high enough to get those dirty power plants out of the city, right, we did that.
Right.
So most of the public really has no idea where their electricity comes from these days. But that's changing rapidly with the energy transition. And there's not a week goes by that the New York Times isn't doing a piece about the need to build more infrastructure and transmission and permitting, and all of these subjects are really getting to the front of mind of the public. And we have a lot of infrastructure that we have to build. Utility companies are, not necessarily thinking through the more difficult aspects of designing these energy landscapes yet, because they haven't really had to. There's been a lot of low-hanging fruit of easy green fields to throw panels down and get them permitted easily, but that's rapidly changing. And the amount of land area that we're going to need to successfully meet our targets is orders of magnitude more than we've built so far. And we can rely on rooftops, and we will, and we can continue to build those utilitarian installations in remote locations. But at some point, we do need to think about bringing more energy generation infrastructure into the city in ways that enhance public space, provide co-benefits for people. A solar landscape can coexist with a public park, an urban farm. It actually improves the crop yields by partially shading the ground and reducing irrigation requirements. So there's a lot of creative thinking that is being had right now, and we're really excited to be in the middle of that.
Oh, Bob, that's good news in a lot of ways, because I was sitting here listening to Robert talk about it, that, you know, and I've known some of the executives at Con Edison, and like, trying to get to, we're going to introduce art into this is like, what?
Again, we're talking about renewable energy and green energy. Talk to us about, what does it look like when you put an aesthetic to it that is beautiful? What would we be expecting?
I love this question. And actually, Robert is really good at describing some of the outcomes.
You
so
start.
Describe Solar Hourglass from the winning submission from Logi 2014 Copenhagen.
Okay, so set the stage. You're visiting the Little Mermaid in Copenhagen, right? Across the water from there is a place called Restaloon, which is an old brownfield shipyard. It can't be developed for residential habitation yet because it's still too polluted. So the city is mitigating it right now. A holding company has the land, and we held a design competition for that site in 2014. And the winning project by Santiago Muras Cortez is called the Solar Hourglass. It uses concentrated solar power thermal energy technology to run a turbine, just like any other thermal power plant. But the way that it gets its heat is directly from the sun. So it's shaped like an hourglass to remind us that there's still time to avert the worst effects of climate change if we can act together. So it's a positive, inspiring message about our clean energy future, talking about how great the world will be once we've stopped combusting carbon-based fuels, because that's a lot of what we need to do is inspire the world about this.
And there's a beam of light in the center of this. So rather than sand falling, there's a beam of light in the center.
I'm sorry, I tend to go off on tangents when I talk about this artwork because it has so many layers. But yeah, it takes, in the top bulb of this hourglass, there are these heliostat mirrors that track the sun across the sky, and they focus its energy onto this parabolic shaped mirror that through its geometry creates this beam of light that's the power of 1,000 suns, and it beckons to you across the water as you're at the Little Mermaid. You can see it all the way, like, glistening.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And then you can walk right up to it. You can put your hand on an insulated cylinder of glass so you don't burn yourself, but you can feel the heat through that glass. You can viscerally understand how the technology works, because below your feet at that moment is a salt collector that turns to molten salt, and then a heat transfer fluid goes through that, flashes to steam, turn a turbine. And all that happens below your feet as you're standing and feeling the heat on that glass where that beam of light is about to turn into energy. So
does this cost a lot to make happen, though? Because energy companies are very cost sensitive. So to be able to make a work of art, is that more expensive than just slapping some bricks up there?
What's the difference, let's say, percentage wise between doing a standard power plant and something like this hourglass?
Well, something you can do is flip that conversation to what kind of economic development and impact does large-scale public art bring to a city?
Okay.
So, for example, New York City Waterfalls, and I might have my numbers slightly wrong, but New York City Waterfalls was a $15.5 million project to install. It was up for 4 months. And this is a tremendous artwork. And what's great is that it's very well studied, the incremental spending that came in, and it's something like $53 million over that 4 months. So if you flip that conversation to the impact of public art, and now imagine that that public artwork is up for the next 30 years, still bringing people, tourists, to visit it because it's incredible, but at the same time, generating real megawatt hours of clean electricity for
the
city.
So I forgot to add
the generating on the economy as well.
That's right.
Yeah, I forgot to add the best part of the solar hourglass is that its capacity is actually rather impressive. And it would generate enough power to offset the electrical needs of about 1,000 homes in the city.
Mm. And would cost about the same amount of money as New York City Waterfalls cost.
Oh, I see. Right.
Oh, it's just, yeah. The Olafur Elias.
That's right.
No, it's interesting. Actually, I've actually been in that field because there was a conference nearby, and I spent actually a fair amount of time in Copenhagen. So it's kind of like a desolate no man's land at the moment. So
who's the decision maker around what this art is going to be, what it's going to look like? Who are the decision makers?
It also must be in different places.
No, right, like, absolutely.
Like that's Abu Dhabi might be the sheikh, and here might be.
So we run design competitions by invitation for cities around the world. They've been in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, New York City for Fresh Coast Park, Copenhagen, Santa Monica, Melbourne, Australia, back to Abu Dhabi, Fresh Coast Park, Nevada Fly Ranch, a partnership with Burning Man, and also a site in Mannheim, Germany. And these competitions have an official jury set. So we put out a design brief, people respond, and then there's an official jury process. And those are really the people who are making the decision as to who the winners are. We like to stack that jury in the selection process with local stakeholders.
And talk to us about how do you find those people? Who are they? What voices are around the table when you're making these decisions?
Yeah, it's tremendously interdisciplinary. So actually before the official jury process, we have a shortlisting event, and that is around 40 people who are very local to the area. It includes scientists, engineers, folks in the art world, landscape architects, local politicians. And then we have these breakout groups. So each group, we have about 5 groups, and they, get down and dirty with the design brief and the design submissions and make some big decisions.
It's actually one of the most exciting events in the design competition process. Now, that's what we're describing right now is an open call competition for a cash prize award. Future competitions, we would like to go directly to construction, in which case the selection committee would be put together of all of the stakeholders that have a say in the future of the land that the project is taking place in, and ideally a diverse group of stakeholders that represent the community. That's really at the heart of what we're the provocation of the project is really these energy landscapes that we're building with this multi-trillion-dollar investment in the energy transition. We can do it. We've learned many lessons about how to do things good and how not to do them. With our interstate highway system, for example, we destroyed communities. We can't do that again. There's not really the same parallel with a solar farm, but at the same time, we have an opportunity to bring people into designing their own energy landscapes, feeling a sense of empowerment that the energy transition is something that they are helping make happen, not something that's happening to them. And the investor pool, like we can either give all of these projects to Wall Street to invest in and earn from, or we can diversify that and give people the opportunity through cooperatives to build their own energy landscapes, combine them with urban agriculture, think creatively about how these landscapes can be used through into the future. When we did this before in the Works Progress Administration, when we invested this much in energy infrastructure, the federal government hired 10,000 artists to be a part of that design process. And we benefit from that today because people are still going, as we speak, to the Hoover Dam right now. They're enjoying that beautiful Art Deco art in that energy infrastructure. We have the opportunity to do that again for the future generations to remember this important time in history.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And today we're talking with Robert and Liz from Land Art Generator. And, I also want to bring up that you do a lot of other kind of programs, too, for school groups.
Yeah, we do a lot of educational programming. It's really at the heart of our mission is to reach out to students and people of all ages that can benefit from STEAM education. We create unique educational materials that are free downloads on our website. That includes flashcards, puzzle games, board games. We go into communities and we do workshops with students of all ages. And we help young people reimagine what energy infrastructure could look like in their own neighborhood. We've done art and energy camps, working with groups of kids from age 7 to 17 who have designed solar artworks for their own community. We do solar mural programs. We really go deep into communities with our educational programming.
So if somebody wanted to work with you guys, how would you
just email us.
Just email you.
Right, that's simple. But I wanted to kind of talk about environmental justice.
Yes.
You know, because that is what is happening now. You know, there are a lot of communities, poor communities, end up with not a fair share of some of the issues that come with building infrastructure. So what is your ethic around that? Or what is your thinking around that? Can you share that?
It's really fundamental to why we started the Land Art Generator Initiative, because we were seeing these large-scale utilitarian landscapes of energy, which are chained off behind barbed wire fences and security cameras. And, you know, sure, they are lowering all of our carbon footprint, these infrastructures. And so in that way, they are beneficial to society, but that's where it stops. And there's so much more we can do. These landscapes can be designed to become places where people can be, not just be locked out behind a fence. They can be designed to bring social co-benefits to the community. And these landscapes can provide good food and in these shared cooperative arrangements and communities where they're led by community and designed with community.
And that's really the heart of it is how can all voices be at the table during the energy transition? And
valued, you know, that's a huge piece of this, because when you're a community person and you're sitting there and you're listening to the architects, you listen to the engineers and you're like, oh, what's going on here? You know, how do you make all of this accessible?
Mm-hmm.
You
that's
know, this
right.
information accessible.
And not mm-hmm. everyone has the
language,
same language skill. That's exactly what I was going to say. Not yeah. everyone has that. So really, we wrote a paper a couple of years ago called Build Back Solar, and it is about this issue. How do we create policies within communities where, you know, where there's representation from every single community for what's going to happen to their neighborhood? And rather than it happening to them, have them be a part of that conversation and making those decisions with the policymakers.
I'll add that there's a rich tradition in community development and co-design with communities in the architecture, landscape architecture communities, ever since, you know, Jane Jacobs, you know, started opening our eyes to how citizens can be involved in designing their communities. And so there's a bit of a disconnect, because you've got people who know how to work collaboratively, participatory design process to make beautiful places that function well for people and that lift people up. And then you have energy developers who have only known this one thing,
right?
Because they haven't had to go outside of that comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But we need to merge those worlds together. We need to have architects and landscape architects on these energy development teams. We need to be thinking creatively. And it's good for the energy developers too, because then at the end of the day, when they're going for the final operating permit, they don't get hung up on lawsuits or NIMBYism.
So how do you sell them on that, though? Because their mindsets tend to be, let's just get this thing done.
Well, I think there's another key aspect of it, which is the key stakeholder engagement process.
Right, but I wanted to hear about that. Now, you're talking about getting through the permitting process, but are there any other wins? Well, that's a big win right there, but yeah.
I think at this point, we're demonstrating the model.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We're putting it out there. We would love to collaborate with a big development project so that we could see where they can find added value to this way of thinking. Mm-hmm. Not to say that the entire 10 megawatt plant needs to be an artwork, but part of it, maybe 1% for the art for energy. Let's think about how they can give back a little.
I love that 1% art for the energy.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Yeah. That's a great idea.
So if you had to pick some place that, say, would it be the best candidate to do this? Now, I know I'm putting you on the spot, but that's what makes
New
for
York
the radio.
New York City, of course.
but who would you, I mean, is it the Middle East? Is it, you know, I wouldn't give you countries, but.
Well, everywhere we've worked, we've enjoyed working there. So we're putting together this portfolio of typologies, site typologies that include landfills, high desert landscapes, waterfronts.
Brownfield.
Public civic parks. So any of our books, we brought two here today, One of them is for the project that we did in partnership with Burning Man for Fly Ranch. And those are being built right now out there in the field. But that's a really remote landscape, 20 miles away from the nearest electrical connection, and just totally has to be, all the infrastructure needs to be designed regeneratively for that landscape and through the lens of art, because it's Burning Man. So that's what that collaboration was all about. And so there's a whole portfolio in that book about desert landscapes, and the intersection. That landscape is very unique, with a salt flat and a mountain on the other side. Then the other book we brought today is Mannheim, Germany, which we just closed our partnership with the Bundesgarten Show, Buga 23. And that's all about the intersection of energy and horticulture and gardening. And there are really wonderful examples in there at the scale of what they call in Germany the Kleingarten, which is about a 400 square meter parcel and publicly owned land, but they are rented out these little parcels where people can get away from the city and tend their garden. So we asked the teams this past year to design Kleingarten scale art interventions, and they're really beautiful. So you've got a whole portfolio of artwork that generates energy at that scale, and then also at the public park scale, because the design site is a new public park that used to be a U.S. military base, actually.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM, and we're talking to both Elizabeth and Robert. What about the microgrids? Is there something that you can do there? Because now that communities are looking at that as ways to kind of isolate their energy infrastructure, what's happening there? Is that something that you've been thinking about?
Microgrids are wonderful. I was just saying earlier how the first one was in downtown Manhattan, the first DC microgrid. And that is the future of energy, too, is a well-interconnected microgrid system where there's resiliency through local storage. And hopefully these are owned cooperatively, and that people can buy in to these community solar projects who don't have space to put solar panels on their roof. They might live in an apartment, but they can purchase a segment of the community solar installation. And that is definitely happening in Brooklyn. And that's awesome. And then, so if within these community solar projects, there are opportunities to do something with a creative angle, then that can be a really good entry point to introducing people to the co-op, to the community solar project, through this energy generating artwork that's sort of is an emblematic representation of that project. And then people can know that their refrigerator is being powered by an artwork, which is, how cool is that?
Yeah, how cool is that, right?
And, and then, of course, there's the whole revolution now that's sort of tangentially related to microgrids, which is virtual power plants, where people are actually providing energy services through the energy that they're generating from their rooftop solar, from their batteries, from their EV, from their electric vehicles,
so
and their charging.
What a virtual power plant is. Okay. Well,
the virtual power plant is a way to aggregate all of those things mm-hmm. together and then provide grid balancing services for later use. And that can function within a certain area, like typically a few blocks would be a nice microgrid size within a city. And then those can be connected to other microgrids and to the wider grid. But then if there's a blackout, there's an outage, that microgrid just keeps on humming.
Yeah. Some of the challenges Texas has. But this is kind of like crowdsourced energy in a certain sense, right?
Yeah.
So what are the plans for the future? Mm-hmm. And what are the projects that you have that are coming up?
We're building.
Yeah. Oh, fabulous.
Yeah. we have a big construction project happening here in the United States. And we built a project in the UK last year.
Mm-hmm. Wind Nest.
How complicated?
Well, we're finishing schematic design right now. Mm-hmm. And we've got a great team of engineers.
I'll say the artist is Riccardo Mariano. He's an Italian architect and artist who works in Berlin. He's entered the Land Art Generator competition on numerous years. And it was his 2019 project that we're developing. So we've got in the city that we're working in, we've got an excellent structural engineering team that has figured out how to put it together. So we're pretty confident in the details around that. We've got really beautiful solar technology that we're going to be integrating It's an excited community that's getting involved. We were down there a couple months ago doing a community day where we were cleaning up the park and talking about the artwork. And so we'll be doing more of that. It's a really exciting project. It's when you see it, you just think that's obvious. It's just so beautiful, functional. It's going to generate about 400 megawatt hours a year, which is enough to power a neighborhood. And that's going to be just clean energy that's going to be given to the city. It's going to offset the demands of a cultural institution.
And at the same time will be a place where the community can gather and have celebrations and daily happenings and spontaneity and be living within this artwork and this infrastructure.
How have you aligned with some of these activist organizations? I mean, how do you align with those? Because I would think those would be your big partners here with climate change, you know?
You know, before I answer, I just want to interject something that, you know, I know these people, these lovely people for years now, right?
Yeah.
6 years or something? Or I don't know what it is. And one of the things I'd always think, oh, you know, I'd love to see one of these things manifest itself, you know, not aside from the educational program. So it's really exciting to hear this.
I think, you know, we started the project in 2008. We ran our first competition in Dubai in 2010. And our first decade was the, like you said, Eli, a decade of imagination, ideation, and showing the world what is possible. And now this decade, this is our decade of deployment. We're really focused on manifesting these ideas in the real world. And I think that will be really helpful in getting the activist community on board and rallying around this when there's a place we can go and meet. And so really having a lot more tactile displays and examples is going to be a really, really big game changer for us as an organization.
And we are an organization that really relies on partnerships. Mm-hmm. We are all about partnerships and participation. Otherwise, it's just the two of us. So we thrive in these relationships that we've been building around the world with organizations and community groups, individuals, firms, government entities, and more.
Excellent. So what you're doing is so progressive and it's fearless in a lot of ways. And I'm just so inspired by the fact that you're in the energy space, which can be dull, but you've been able to bring in that art, that artwork that's just going to be so satisfying to people who will get a chance to really just experience it. So you're creating experiences as well as dealing with these energy problems.
We were very lucky in our first design challenge that we held for three sites. One in Dubai and two sites in Abu Dhabi. This was long.
I can imagine what that looked like.
And the outcomes didn't come in until the last. We were asleep, actually, when the submissions came in, and we thought the project had failed. We woke up, and the submissions were there, and we were so happy. And we presented those to Masdar in Abu Dhabi. They put us in January of 2011. Front and center in the energy sector. They put us at the World Future Energy Summit as their display. And that was it. That immediately thrust us into the energy sector, and there's been no looking back.
Excellent. Well, that's all the time that we have, but thank you so much, Robert Ferry and Elizabeth Manoyan. Thank you.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.